Welcome, everybody. I am Tearsheet Editor-in-Chief Zach Miller. I love saying welcome, everybody. Like, it's always comes out too intense. This is a Tearsheet deep dive. This is where you get a chance to hear from our editorial team to go a little bit behind the scenes into how the sausage is made, how the stories that we're covering are produced, our interest, and kind of what goes into those stories. It takes you beyond the page. And I'm joined by our editorial team here. We've got Sarah Khari and Rabab Asan with us. We're talking about Gen Z influencers and a budgeting coloring book. Three weird things. You'll hear the connection between those three things as we go on. But welcome, Sarah and Rabab.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, guys.
So I think one of the things that, you know, if you're reading Tearsheet and you've been listening to our podcasts or you've seen us live in person, Gen Z is a subject that's permeated our coverage, I would say, pretty unbalancedly over the past 18 months. There's a reason for that, right? This generation is aging. The oldest ones are in the workforce and are actively saving and using financial services. And one of the things we heard our last conference last year, our Tearsheet, the Big Bank Theory conference, which is our flagship conference, when we polled everybody and asked them, what are the biggest issues you have in your life? When we asked financial executives working for some of the biggest banks in the world, what are your three biggest issues? Touch points. Without fail, people rank Gen Z, figuring out Gen Z. And so we started programming around it. We worked with partners to do this. We started writing about it organically. We just had a symposium last month in New York City on the subject. And what's really clear is, like, what I think we didn't expect, and I'm going to turn this over to you guys, was even though this was a very important subject to banks, like, when you really start to peel apart the onion, I'm using a lot of metaphors here, mixed metaphors, like, banks are really just beginning this process. And they are trying to figure out, how do you stay relevant with a young generation that doesn't find it to be relevant? So I know, Rabab, like, in your coverage, technology stands out as one of these big hurdles. Like, maybe we can start there as a leg into having a conversation around that.
Right. So thank you for the introduction, Zach. I think there's a couple of things. Even if you get a bank to focus in on Gen Z after that prioritization has already taken place, you have to think about technology, right? That's where the work gets done. And when these results aren't out yet, so I guess it's a sneak peek, but from our working group, most of the executives there said that out of all of the reasons why they can't really build products for Gen Z or things that they're having a problem with, technology is the biggest, right? So 63% of them said that it's a roadblock. And I'm not really surprised by that result, because when I cover accessibility, I also hear some of the same things. And from a computer science perspective, it makes sense. It's old tech and you're trying to do new things with it, right? So it's not, the result isn't surprising, but how banks are sort of trying to solve for it is surprising. So one of the things that I heard in the working group was, maybe we could solve for Gen Z by personalization, right? By building great CX. And Bank of America just did something which was really interesting. They built a new integrated platform. They had five different apps, so banking, investing, and retiring, five different ones. And they brought those together into one app. It took 4 years of work. And you can imagine, if a bank that size does something like this, it takes them 4 years. Would a bank that is smaller, is it really meaningful for them to do something like this? Would the ROI be there? So those are the questions that I'm sort of thinking about right now.
Right. So it's almost like, even before you get to what the app looks like or how it works with a customer, it's almost like thinking about what's the experience for our customers. And so does it make sense for a young person to have separate app for every part of financial services with the same institution? Like, that's a historical legacy. There are different products, different platforms in each one of those. It almost makes zero sense, actually, when I think about it right now, like, why you would have separate ones. So at least, like, the first step is to say, like, let's approach this. It sounds like what you're saying, you know, let's approach this as a cohesive experience. You're doing business with our organization. You should be able to do that through a single touch point.
Right. And it's not really, I think, intuitive when you first think about it, because I think the intuition there is you want something for Gen Z, you build something separate, right? But fragmentation then creeps along, and then you have to find a way to personalize and not fragment at the same time. That is I think that is really difficult, but it can be figured out through CX. I think the challenge there with technology really is, in the case of Bank of America, is that information architecture was a really big issue. So I think fancy computer speak for a thing. We have a lot of data and we need to make it speak to each other. But that takes work. They ran, I think, around 16,000 quality tests on that. So
better work when you go live with that. You've got a lot of money and a lot of responsibility for that to work.
And the scale that they have, it's tough to bring together five different platforms. And again, that's just the front end. If you were going to do something like Capital One, it took them a decade, right? So because they were transformed the whole tech stack. So they were pushing towards the cloud, but it took 10 years then at the size of Capital One. So the challenge is definitely big. And then I think about, okay, if you figured out the tech, then you have to think about engagement, which is a whole other piece.
Right. Like, to me, and it begs the question, this came up in our Gen Z working group, is like, actually, can banks design for Gen Z? Like, should that even be something they're trying to do? And I know executives are struggling with that. Are you seeing that in your coverage as well? Like, where, like, we know we've got this big, call it problem set, which is like, how do we make ourselves relevant and appreciated by the largest generation in history, who has shown that they are absolutely looking towards technology, good working technology, to service them in financial services, and banks aren't part of that. So like, either we're faced with like a existential issue, like, do we wait for them to sort of hopefully revert to the mean and act like every other generation, or wait it out and try to approach them where they are and by building the stuff? And it's my contention, I don't think banks can actually design for that generation.
It's an interesting statement. I don't know if I fully agree, but I do see the problem and why you're saying it. So again, one of the things that I'm working on right now, something that came up was around gamification, right? So if a bank decides to build an interface for gamification, let's say financial health, right, tries to gamify that, that would really resonate with Gen Z, but that might not resonate with boomers, right? So this is an inherent problem because boomers are their biggest customers right now. So how do you do something for the future and something for today right now as well? So this is difficult. But if you look at neobanks, they're not coming in with all of this legacy tech. They have their focus. They know that they're, you know, focusing on Gen Z as well. They have their technology in place. So they're going all out with engaging Gen Z, with building products for Gen Z as well. So that's my 2 cents on that.
I appreciate that. Maybe you can give us an example of some technology neobanks that are getting it right and some of the things they're doing to resonate with Gen Z.
Yeah. So one thing that Chime recently did, and again, this is not a technology example per se, but it's an engagement example. And I think it's relevant because they built a adult focused budgeting book, right? Which you could color in. And now I know I've never heard of something like that.
It's not a coloring book that does budgeting. It's a budgeting book that does coloring.
Yeah, it could be either. I was thinking of so many ways.
I like the way you explained that. Yeah.
And to do that, they brought in 2 influencers. That was the part that really stuck with me. They brought in a budgeting expert from TikTok and an artist from Instagram, right? And then when the book was put together, they brought in T-Pain to market it. And obviously the influencers are marketing it as well. So now you have this odd mix of banking, social media, and Hollywood for one product, which isn't really a product either because it's being sold for $1. So if anything, it's an engagement strategy, right? But it's so different. You've never really seen something like that.
I can't imagine a bank doing that.
And one of the things that the influencer said to me, which really, I guess, stuck out to me was, banks generally seem distant. And if you remember, we did a podcast with US Bank, and they said, we're always trying to get our customers to go to our blogs, but that's hard. And we're just one voice on TikTok or on any social media platform, and that can really drown us out. But what if, so I guess Chime's answer to that is, but what if you're not only one voice, right? And that is a completely different strategy. Of my years just covering this, I've never seen something like that. And it's completely opposite, where banks are trying to take you from your daily lives and trying to make you think about finance. neobanks are like, here's your life and here's finance in it, in your hobbies.
Mm, that's really hitting them where they are. Meaning it's not a channel strategy of like, say, we need to be on TikTok. Even if I decide to be on TikTok, how do I insert myself in a way that brings value to them, even in not necessarily a primary banking interaction?
Yeah, and I think they're imagining it as a, you know, off-ramp to more digital budgeting. But again, like the fact that it's not even a product central to anything. They put in all of this star power for something that's just purely an engagement strategy, right? Really speaks to the kind of way neobanks think about engagement and how different it is from banks, traditional ones. I mean,
just a weird aside, T-Pain, you know, who's known for autotune, you mentioned him as being one of the influencers on this campaign. There's a Tiny Desk concert that NPR has on YouTube where he has no autotune and he's singing kind of a cappella. Beautiful, beautiful voice. You wouldn't have expected it, but just an aside. I think that's a great segue to you, Sarah, because you had an article that went up today, actually, that was fascinating about two of the largest financial institutions about how they're approaching financial literacy, exactly this issue that Rabab mentioned, differently. Maybe you could tell us what that story was about.
Yeah, so I first want to talk about how there's a dialogue surrounding financial education in the last couple of years. And I see this shift in conversations of executives whom we interview or you know, hear during conferences, where at some point they do touch that financial education is the starting point of capturing consumers' interests. So I think part of it is due to Gen Z, who wants to establish a sound financial footing early on in their lives. But having said that, 40% of consumers across different age groups, they are struggling with basic financial concepts, or they don't know how to manage debt or build credit. So I think this creates a window of opportunity for financial firms to forge different partnerships or, you know, implement novel strategies. And some of the fintechs are doing that, like we mentioned, Chime and Greenlight, who uses gamification. Last year, FICO also partnered with the U.S. Soccer Foundation to enable financial literacy for teenage students. And in return, they would get a game day ticket. So some of these fintechs are really hitting the mark, but I think incumbent banks are not there yet, but they are starting to move in that direction. And some of the banks are, you know, trying to hit the mark and keep up with the competition too. And recently, Bank of America entered into this partnership with a luxury lifestyle brand, Tory Burch, to introduce business webinars. To introduce business webinars, which is focused for women entrepreneurs, because there are they seek resources in two major categories, which is financial education and networking. And then there's financial support, like access to credit or funding opportunities. So those business webinars would be conducted by Tory Burch Foundation staff and industry experts and entrepreneurship journeys. And founders and participants can, you know, ask about their pain points or discuss about their business growth strategies and stuff like that.
I think that's a very interesting example where you have like a very strong brand that's not known for its financial services, but where the ethos of the brand, you know, talks about women empowerment and being able to partner with the financial institution to be able to, you know, bring, and it's through the foundation arm of that too, which I think is also really interesting. Did you get a feel for, is there a tie-in of financial services there? Is it just educational? Or does it go even a step further? Is there access through this program to financial services?
Yeah, so this is the second time they both have come together. They've worked previously 10 years ago as well, and it's still for a capital program to raise funding opportunities and access to credit. That's still going on, and to date they've raised over $100 million for funding opportunities for women entrepreneurs. So this is the second endeavor that they've reached out for, and it is more than that. It'll translate into, you know, funding opportunities again, one-to-one Q&A, interactive sessions, and people can address their personal pain points related to their own individual businesses.
This sounds almost like something that Rabab was alluding to, where a bank is leveraging, you know, a brand and a brand's presence in people's lives, being able to have... So the bank itself isn't necessarily having that direct conversation, but it's through this sort of lens of these influencers, which give it credibility and also like speak more directly to the issues. Like an influencer knows their community better than a bank would, you know? What about Capital One? I know that in that... Sorry, go ahead. I know there's a little lag.
I was saying, so these are unconventional partnerships. And I think banks recognize that it's high time they pull their socks up. So they're trying to keep up with the competition and try to leverage their opportunities, because it's a win-win situation for banks. They'll get cross-selling strategies, opportunities, better retention rates, more product adoption. So they have something for them.
And what is Capital One doing? I know you wrote about both those institutions in today's article.
Yeah, so Capital One is also zeroing in on financial education for consumers of all ages. While they have ample stuff on their website, like articles, blogs, and video series, they last year partnered with Khan Academy to launch online learning programs and a series of short videos. Additionally, they are focusing for financial literacy of older adults as well. So it's not only about, you know, younger people. And in those videos, it's the older people who are, you know, demonstrating the process or explaining the complex financial terms, so that they can gap their digital literacy as well when they are navigating online banking options.
So this is, you know, I think I really enjoyed the story. I enjoyed reading it, and I enjoyed the process of you producing it. I think it really highlights two of the largest institutions in the U.S. that you can find a way to bring financial literacy to your audience, or to new audiences. Let's call it new audiences, because that's what they're doing here. They're tapping new audiences in a way that doesn't drive traffic back to your website. Deep embedded in your website is some financial education that you created 10 years ago. This feels very alive and very interactive and very in front of the business, not sort of hidden. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, when we talk about financial education or financial literacy, what usually comes to mind is a consumer perspective or an individual.
Right.
But it is equally important for, you know, SMBs, entrepreneurs, minorities, women, older adults. So everybody's having their individual journey in that.
So thank you for that. And thank you, Rabab. This is a short and sweet session. But one of the things I do want to bring it back to was, you know, we're talking about Gen Z here. Gen Z sort of underlines a little bit in both of your stories. The necessity and the trial and tribulation of a financial institution trying to get to them. I just want to reflect something last month when we were doing our programming for the Gen Z symposium. One of the challenges, so we heard from everybody, great, we want to do Gen Z, this is super important, great, let's roll up our sleeves. And we actually had a slate of original speakers from some of the largest institutions, like we normally do at our conferences. But little by little, as we got closer and closer to the conference, one by one, they pulled out. And this is actually never in the decade plus that I've been doing this. I've never seen that happen. Mm-hmm. Occasionally you have one speaker pull out, two speak, but this was like everybody pulled out. And I think what was happening as we were discussing with them was that, I sort of alluded to this in my intro, was like banks know that they have to get to Gen Z. They've got to figure this out. On the other hand, they also realize like, wow, like the fintechs, they get it. They know how to do it. We we don't quite know how to do that yet. And so that maybe standing up on stage talking about our strategy to reach Gen Z, we're not even there yet. Like, we're at the formulation stage. And so I think they, what we heard from them is they'd rather be spectators or attendees versus speakers, because they're still in learning mode. And I think that that's, you know, that shows where we are in this whole spectrum of things. And so I don't know, it's going to be interesting as banks try to figure it out, because they do recognize the importance of it. But I know, Rabab, in your research, like, they also aren't confident of their institution's abilities, or their own person, more so in their own personal abilities, but not in their institution's abilities to actually get this right.
Right. And I was just, as Sara was explaining, you know, what they're doing in terms of financial literacy, and as people who cover this Gen Z space a lot, I know there are certain themes that are very relevant to Gen Z. So it's digitalization, there's financial literacy, there's CX, right? But every time I feel like any of these traditional FIs are doing something that is related to these themes, it's never Gen Z focused. And if I'm wrong, I would love to hear what you have to say.
Never say never. I'm sure there are exemptions, but I hear what you're saying, totally.
It always seems a bit broader. It's not that they don't deal with personalization. So even Bank of America was working on personalization. That was like the push in the app, right? And in Sara's case, they are working on financial literacy, but it's never Gen Z focused. And I was wondering, Zach, why do you think that is? Like, why do they go for the broader audience rather than just going for Gen Z?
Well, this is one of the challenges we hear from the executives themselves, is like designing products that go cross-generation. I don't think they believe that, and maybe this is through the usability tests that they're doing, that they actually have products that resonate with the younger generation. So I don't know if it's true that they don't do that, but I do agree with that sentiment that a lot of what banks do, the big money center banks, is sort of generic. They build one set of content and kind of tweak it to make it, you know, sort of accessible to all three of the major generations right now, but not quite really for any of them. And I think that's why most Gen Z people feel like, you know, traditional financial services aren't attuned to them, because it doesn't speak their language. It's not in a format that they consume. It's not in a channel that they consume it. It's not even speaking to their concerns, because what concerns, a boomer, you know, on the cusp of going into retirement is very different from a young person graduating college, going into the workforce for the first time.
So would you two agree that it's not so much as like the products that need to change, but it's also like the content and engagement strategies that need to be more focused and personalized? Maybe the products could largely remain the same, but the engagement strategies could be more focused. Do you two agree with that?
What do you think, Sara?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Yeah, so I agree with Rabab. I was reading somewhere that related to financial literacy, banks usually send ads or target consumers of 30 to 40 years for mortgage rates. So why don't they use data to know better or personalize the product? Because they might be looking for a smaller house or better mortgage rates after 60 years of age, when they've reached retirement and they want to have a smaller house. So that's an ongoing debate. And I feel personalization is at the heart of it. And that's true. I feel they're not only targeting Gen Z.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the old age adage that, you know, you go, why did Willie Sutton rob banks, you know, when he was asked, is because that's where the money is. So, you know, banks are still targeting older people because they do have more financial means, they have resources, younger people don't. They will over time. And I do think that they run the risk of playing this really dangerous game of chicken. If they don't start designing for them now, they will make themselves irrelevant. It's almost like Wayne Gretzky. I use sports metaphors, where Bob always like makes fun of me for it. But like he talked about in hockey, you have to skate to where the puck is going to be. Like, you have to find that trajectory. And I think banks aren't there yet. And I think that, but they are taking steps. I think probably the strongest steps they can take, and I hear this from both you, Sara, and Rabab, is by partnering with firms that do get it. partnering with brands that do get it, partnering with communities that do get it and do have that language and that connection with their constituencies. And maybe the future of banking in Gen Z is an embedded finance role where they're not necessarily the big brand in front of their community, but they're sort of more in the background as a utility, and it's being delivered and communicated through organizations and brands that can communicate it that way. I don't know. But I do think that that could be something that banks do today that could actually move the needle for them, as opposed to designing for the future.
So the roles are changing.
The roles are changing. And we are changing. Thank you for joining us today on the Tearsheet Deep Dive. So we got in three things: Gen Z, influencers, and a budgeting coloring book. So thanks for joining us. Until next time. And thank you, Rabab and Sara. Great talking to you again.
It was. Thank you for having us.